Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Connecting Faith. You can hear the show live each weekday at noon on Faith Radio. And there are many more podcasts for this and all our Faith Radio shows available online. Our web address is myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Hello and welcome to Connecting Faith. Thank you for tuning in. I always appreciate the opportunity to get together and discuss some important topics here this month in November. Among other things is Adoption Awareness Month, and we're going to focus on adoption today on the program. And I encourage you, maybe if you're have been an adoptive family, or still are, I guess you are, or maybe you've been adopted and have grown up and want to just share a bit about your story, or if you're considering adoption, should love to have you join the conversation today, because our guest has experience. She should have a master's or a PhD in parenting, I think, or something. Mary Austin is the author of Family Feast for $75 a Week, and we'll explain why that's kind of important because, we'll tell you in a moment. She's also written Forever Mom, What to Expect When You're Adopting. That's the book we're going to focus on today, and A Sane Woman's Guide to Raising a Large Family, which intrigues me, and mainly because her and her husband and their 10 children need to learn how to stay sane and eat and all those important things. Huh? So, Ted, that's a 10 would be that would be a big family, wouldn't it? So,
yeah, halfway to the Duggars, I think.
Sure.
Right? It's pretty good.
I wonder if there's a competition going on. No, we'll we'll ask her about that. But, you know, her by their 8th anniversary, they had 4 kids. And not long after that, God opened their eyes to the need of orphans around the world, and that began a process of adoption. And since that time, they adopted 6 children from Korea and Ethiopia, bringing them to a grand total of 10 kids. And she's also been homeschooling and learned a lot about, of course, feeding a family great food on less. She spent some time as an obstetric nurse, helping mamas through labor, and then started writing, and has written a wonderful book that's honest and real, and I think it'll be very helpful. Actually, we've got some copies to give away, so I want to encourage you to join in on the conversation today so you can get a copy of Forever Mom, What to Expect When You're Adopting. Mary, welcome to Connecting Faith.
Thank you so much for having me.
You do have a pretty large family, I guess, by today's standards, at least American standards anyway.
That's true. I don't think we're going to catch up to the Duggars anytime soon.
Okay, good to know. In fact, yeah, we didn't mention that you do actually have some grandbabies around now, too.
That's right. Fun. 4 little grandbabies and 1 more on the way. It's really a fun time of life to have our foot in both worlds because our youngest daughter at home is still 9 years old, so we're very much in the thick of parenting still, but enjoying those grandbabies also.
Well, maybe just a little bit about your story. As I just mentioned, that you became aware of the need of orphans, and that sort of prompted you to consider adoption. And I know, as you tell in the book, that your husband didn't necessarily feel that same call at the moment. Maybe talk a little bit about that early on.
Yeah, not at first. At that point, we had 4 kids by birth, and when we first started talking about adoption, they ranged from age 9 down to age 3. And really, we did, for a while, think that that was the right number for us. But about the time my baby turned 3 years old, I was experiencing some serious baby longing and wondering if really this whole baby phase of our life could actually be done already. And so at that time, yeah, God was just, it seemed like placing all sorts of adoptive families in our lives. The China adoption, this was back in 1997, China adoption was just getting to be more heard of. And my heart was with those little baby girls in China who might not otherwise have a family. And so, but when my husband and I first started talking about it, he was pretty content with 4 kids. You know, that's a good-sized family, nice round number. We had 2 girls, 2 boys. And so we talked for a while, and he just at first was not really interested. And I had to get to the point of just giving that dream to God and saying, you know what, God, I am so much wanting another baby, but John doesn't right now. So either take this longing away from me or change his heart to want more kids. Because, you know, it's that agreement piece just has to be there. And the crazy thing was that when I hushed up and gave my husband some peace to think, then he started asking questions and becoming more interested. And it really was just a work of God in his heart, because he, at Christmas time that year, said, you know what, I think we should go forward. And that next July, Josh came home from Korea, and it was just a true transformation in John's heart. He was so thrilled to hold that kiddo in his arms, and it was just a really together adoption and a great blessing. So we adopted Josh in July of 98, and then Ben came home in January of 2000. And again, I think at that point we thought for a while that we were done, but then we ended up adopting Emily in 2004 and Juliana in 2005. Those were our first daughters from Ethiopia. And then in 2007, that was our last adoption of Lydia and Zaytuna. They came home at ages 9 and 11. And at that point, we had, for a little while, we had 10 kids at home, but our oldest was in college at that point. So we just had literally months with all the kids at home together.
Sure. You know, just curious, is there any issues in terms of, you know, growing your family through adoption that agencies sort of look at that and say, well, no, you've got a large family already, and so we're not going to, or is because you've already adopted that you maybe have a, I don't know, we'd say an inside track?
Well, it very much is dependent on the rules of that particular country. We actually, one of the reasons we switched from Korea to Ethiopia after we had six kids is because Korea wasn't comfortable with larger families. And that obviously is also a factor when adopting in the U.S. And with newborn adoption in the U.S., you have to submit a dossier, I mean, not a dossier, but a letter to birth family. And so the birth family has the opportunity to choose a family whose size they feel comfortable with. So it's up to the country and up to birth family in a lot of cases. But agencies do some qualifying, and they also want to make sure that your income is adequate for the size of family that you're imagining, that kind of thing.
You did talk in the book about there was an opportunity for you to adopt within the U.S. In fact, you took a plane trip expecting that you were going to be bringing a baby home. Didn't happen, which is maybe not all that uncommon.
Yeah, you know, I think so many adoptive families can point to places in their adoption journey where doors opened and where doors closed. And yeah, for a while we were pursuing a newborn infant adoption in the U.S. This was after both of our Korean adoptions. And we were hoping to adopt an African-American infant in the U.S. And we waited quite a long time, and no birth family chose us. And finally, after we'd been waiting nearly a year, we were chosen, and the birth mom seemed pretty gung-ho, but she went into labor right around Christmas time, asked me to come be with her, and within an hour or two of birth, she changed her mind and decided to parent, which, boy, I really respect and understand that decision. But, yeah, it was made for kind of a emotional Christmas that year to be going home without a baby when we had great hopes that we would be bringing home a baby.
It does seem like this, you know, the particular path toward family in terms of the adoption process, it's filled with lots of kind of fits and starts. It's not necessarily a straight line. I mean, and I'm sure you probably talked to plenty others that can share that same sort of, there are a lot of, like I say, doors closed, doors open, and a lot of waiting in between, maybe.
That's right. That's right. We had some roundabout paths ourselves, and I know that many people have experienced that. But it's really interesting after the fact, you know, after your child is home, you can just see God's guiding in your life and see where he opened doors and where he closed doors and how he provided opportunities and got the right kids to your family. So it's a faith-building journey, that's for sure.
And is there a, is there one question that maybe comes up most often when you have opportunity to speak about adoption? We'll kind of jump into more of the details in your book, but is there sort of one overall question people say, well, I don't know, or I'm considering, or it's, is it the money issue that is maybe high at the list?
You know, money is pretty high on people's concern list, and I always just reassure people about that. John and I have always had a real moderate income. When Josh came home, I quit working as a nurse and became a stay-at-home mom, and so we've been in one-income family since 1998, and God has provided all of our needs, but we're not rich, and we've come up with the money for adoptions in a variety of ways. But I have to tell you one story that was so amazing to us. It was in the process of deciding about timing regarding our fourth adoption. At that point, we already had Josh and Ben from Korea and Emily from Ethiopia, and we knew that we did not want Emily to be the only African-American child in our family, and so we wanted to pursue another adoption from Ethiopia. But at that time, we had no money, and so we said, you know what, when God provides the money, that's when we're going to move forward with our next adoption. And that was in January of 2005. And for several months before that point, John had been trying to sell a large piece of equipment, a sawmill that literally cuts big old trees into timbers to sand down and build furniture with. And he had gotten his use out of that piece of equipment and wanted to sell it, but nobody seemed interested in buying it. Well, the week after we decided to go forward when money came, that sawmill sold for $8,000. And the week after that, we completed our taxes and discovered that we were getting $7,000 back. And so within 3 weeks of saying, you know what, let's see when God's going to provide the money, 3 weeks later, we had $15,000 in our savings account. And we looked at each other and thought, okay, it must be time to go forward. And later we found out that Juliana had come into care at the orphanage the very week that our sawmill sold. So it was just an amazing story of God's providence in my mind. But the really even more amazing thing about that story is that I have heard similar stories from so many different adoptive parents. You know, I'm sure there are listeners out there nodding their heads who've adopted children, and the money comes. You know, remember that our God owns the cattle on a thousand hills. If he leads your family to adopt, he will also provide those finances to bring those kids home.
We're talking about adoption today. What to expect when you're adopting? Maybe it's something you've been considering, or maybe you have experienced the joys and perhaps challenges of it, or you're an adopted child. I would love to have you join the conversation. We'll talk more with Mary Austin about her new book, Forever Mom, What to Expect When You're Adopting. We've got three copies to give away. And you can sign up for one of those and join the conversation here at 877-93-FAITH. That's our phone number. It's 877-933-2484. Or if you want to connect with us online, leave us an email. You can do that at myfaithradio.com and go to the Connecting Faith show page. There's an email link. It'll come right into the studio. And we'll connect with you here on the other side of this short break with Mary Austin. Mary is an author. She's written a number of books, including A Sane Woman's Guide to Raising a Large Family, Family Feast for $75 a week, and What to Expect When Forever Mom, What to Expect When You're Adopting. She writes regularly, blogging about motherhood, food, frugality, and adoption at owlhaven.net. And we'll talk more about that and more in just a moment here with Mary Austin on Connecting Faith. Talking to Mary Austin today. Mary has written a book called Forever Mom, What to Expect When You're Adopting. And her and her husband have some a lot of hands-on experience of that because they have adopted six children, two from Korea, four from Ethiopia, and they have 10 children in their family now, some grandchildren. And Mary blogs regularly about motherhood, food, frugality, and adoption at owlhaven.net. And you can check that out and find out about her writing. Mary, one of the first things you talk about in the book is that there's issues of loss for the adoptive child. Talk a little bit about that and maybe explain more what you mean.
Well, you know, a lot of people can pretty easily imagine those issues of loss in the case of an older child adoption. You know, when a child actually has memories of their first family, you know, it can be pretty easy to imagine some of those loss issues. But what a lot of people don't really think about is that even a child who comes into a family at birth, number one, they've already spent 9 months listening to their first mom's voice and, you know, getting familiar with how she moves and hearing the sounds that are around her in her normal life. And then when they're born, going to a new family, everything is new, everything is different. But even beyond those physical feelings that a baby might feel, the differences, later on, when a child grows and has a chance to think through their story, lots and lots of adoptive kids have a big question in their mind, and that question is, why wasn't my first family able to keep me? Or maybe more pointedly, why didn't they keep me? So that's a really heart-wrenching question for kids a lot of times. And, you know, not every child is going to be deeply affected by this type of thing. There's an expert adoption counselor called Dr. Karen Purvis. She talks about loss and kids, and she says that adopted kids, about a third of them, will adjust very well to the fact that they've been adopted and do very well in their new family. Another one-third of them will have some moderate challenges and issues related to having been adopted. And that final third will have some major challenges to work through and think through. So that means that, you know, two-thirds of kids have at least some issues and some feelings of loss related to the fact that they didn't get to grow up in their first family. So I think that when we're considering adoption, it's just really wise to be prepared for that, be willing to go there in conversation with kids, and even kids who may not broach the subject on their own may need mom or dad to say, you know, I was thinking about your birth mom today on your birthday. I bet she's thinking about you. Or, you know, I bet you got that gorgeous hair from your birth mom, that kind of thing. Just kind of to open up conversations in a gentle way, not all the time, but occasionally, so that kids will know that it's okay to talk about their first family and to talk about feelings that may be related to their adoption status.
Because there is a lot of sort of fear and insecurity, isn't there, for children? I mean, if they're, you know, of any months along at all, that they're coming in a new situation, you know, there's a lot of fear. Maybe if it's over cross-cultural, you know, the food's different, everything's different.
Right.
So they're just, you know, maybe not going to be real talkative or anything.
Right. It can take quite a while to help a new child come out of their shell, to get to know them and their body language and their facial expressions. You know, I look back at pictures of my kids who came home, well, all of them really, who they came home anywhere between the ages of 4 months and 11 years. And on all their faces now, knowing them, I can see, you know, expressions of fear and uncertainty that I really didn't recognize at very first because I didn't know them well enough yet.
Mary, talk a little bit about some of those important things like birth order. Is that important to consider when you're considering adoption, maybe other choices, girl or boy, you know, able-bodied or special needs, or you know, babies or adolescents? How do we decide some of those things?
Well, I think one of the most challenging pieces of paperwork that a lot of adoptive parents have to fill out is that special needs form, where literally it's page after page after page of questions. For example, would you accept a child with cleft lip? Would you accept a child who Was drug exposed in utero? Just all sorts of questions about all sorts of issues. And it's really hard to go through that list and think about what you might be open to. And, you know, the thing is, yeah, it's valuable to go over that list and do a lot of thinking, you know, about, yeah, whether you want a boy or a girl and what age of child you feel equipped to handle that kind of thing. But you always have to be aware that there can be challenges that don't present on paper, or some challenges that seem like a big deal might not be as big a deal as you expect, and there might be another issue that is higher on the importance list for a while. For example, one of our kids was born without a right foot, and that felt like a pretty big special need to us, but he does everything. He wears a prosthetic leg, and he just got his driver's license, and you know, he's so capable. He's so able. And but yet for a while, when he first came home in his first year, he arrived home at almost 2. We had some challenges with attachment, and we had to really work to help him get settled in. And I remember thinking, boy, the prosthetic leg is not a big deal, but this attachment thing can really be a big deal for a while. And it was for a while for us. And, you know, he's doing awesome now. He's a great kid, fun to be around. But sometimes you can't predict what's going to be the challenging thing about an adoption.
Hmm. We're going to talk more about the attachment side of things here in a few minutes, because that's a pretty big issue. And certainly you cover it well in the book Forever Mom. By the way, we've got some copies to give away. If you'd like to join the broadcast, you can call us at 877-93-FAITH. 877-93-FAITH. I am interested in just if you had any words of advice about maybe choosing an agency or things that you should be looking for. Are there any red flags when you're considering the process?
Well, there's a lot of agencies out there, definitely. And it's really important to get feedback from people who've used that agency, not just the people that the agency will give you their names and phone numbers, but other people. Thankfully, the internet these days makes that a pretty easy proposition to, you know, you can get on message boards or, you know, even Facebook and talk to people who have used that particular agency and just find out what the experience was like. Obviously, you want an agency that is ethical and responsive, you know, they'll answer your phone calls. And I think there's probably lists on the internet that you could Google regarding what kinds of questions you should ask an agency to do some more qualifying type stuff. We're very blessed to have really great Christian social workers who did our home study each time, which was a really good thing. I think that God worked out those details for us. And there's a lot of good agencies out there, and there are some less good agencies. So definitely do your homework and find out what agencies are good and recommended in your area. And you'll also need to choose an agency based on, for example, what country you would like to adopt from, or whether you would like to adopt in the U.S. Different agencies handle different things.
Well, we're getting some good advice today from Mary Austin, and we invite you to join in the conversation with us. We'll continue in just a moment as we talk about her book, Forever Mom, What to Expect When You're Adopting. November is National Adoption Awareness Month. If you have adopted and I want to just share a little bit about maybe some of your stories, some of the journey, we're going to spend some time talking about, you know, some attachment issues, how long that takes, and just, you know, the fact that when you're adding a new member of the family, normal is different. And so what does that look like? We'll get more from Mary Austin, who's authored the book Forever Mom and blogs regularly at owlhaven.net. You can join us for the conversation at 877-933-2484. That's 877-93-FAITH. Or connect with us online. Go to myfaithradio.com and then click on the Connecting Faith show page to leave us an email link. And we'll continue in just a moment. Stay tuned. Takes you in, and everything changes. A miracle starts with the beat of a heart when love takes you home. We're talking about adoption, what to expect when you're adopting, and some of the the joys and the challenges that come with that aspect of parenting. And we're getting some wise advice today from Mary Austin. That's O-S-T-Y-N, by the way, in case you're looking it up online, O-S-T-Y-N, Mary Austin. Mary and her husband have 10 children, 6 by adoption, and she's authored a number of books, including A Sane Woman's Guide to Raising a Large Family. And she's still, I think, certifiably sane, as far as we know. And family.
Well, my kids may say I have some moments not. So.
And Family Feast for $75 a week. I don't know if that was, if that's been adjusted for inflation or if that still works. And then the one we're talking about, Forever Mom, What to Expect When You're Adopting. So, Mary, you're talking about sanity, kind of joking about that, but there, you've experienced some challenges in adopting because there is an attachment process that goes on with these kids coming into our home. Talk a little bit about that, and maybe just advice for others that are maybe considering that process.
Yeah, well, we have definitely experienced kind of a range of how attachment worked out for us with our first little guy who came home at 4 months. I swear when he was 3 days old, it felt no different to me than if he'd been born to me. The attachment went really fast, and he was a fussy baby, but he was also a really responsive baby, and it just felt natural really quickly. And then I alluded earlier to our son who came home at 20 months and mentioned that he had more challenge, and definitely that was about a year process. And at first I didn't quite realize what was going on, because it seemed like it was going okay, and yet my feelings toward him at first were a little bit different than my feelings had been towards Josh, and had felt so natural and so easy with Josh, and yet with Ben for a while it kind of felt like I was babysitting somebody else's kid and he wasn't going home, you know. It just, it felt different for a little while, and I was really guilty about that for a while. I felt really guilty because it just didn't seem quite right. And yet then when I read some more about attachment and realized what was going on, in his anxiety over, you know, going to a new place at 20 months of age, and I'd been his basically third caregiver, he had some resistance and some fear to getting a new mom again. And so when I did some reading, I realized that he was doing all sorts of little pushing away behaviors, and you don't realize that part of the reason that you fall in love with a child is because they instinctively have these little endearing behaviors that help you fall in love, basically. You know, they snuggle into your body when you snuggle them. They make eye contact. They smile back when you smile at them. And, well, Ben in those first months was so afraid of this whole new situation that he would avoid eye contact and push away, and he'd ask to be picked up and then want to be put down, and just seemed kind of discontent in my presence, and yet he also wanted to be in my presence too. He was just really conflicted at first, and it just took some steady months of really nurturing him and carrying him around a lot and rocking him and feeding him sweet treats and giving him lots of snuggles. And by the time he had been home a year, things were tons better. And lo and behold, as his behaviors were less fear-based and he was giving me more positive feedback, I think my feelings came around a little quicker than his did. But my point is that it was just any relationship is a very much back and forth thing. So if you have one partner in the relationship who is resisting doing the normal relationship-ish kinds of things, it can feel different to the mom. And so I was just really grateful when he got settled in well and began to feel secure in the relationship, and things were good between us after that first year, but it took a while.
But your older children, as you that you adopted them further on in age, they had their own set of challenges, didn't they?
Absolutely. That was an even greater challenge. You know, they were 9 and 11 on homecoming. They basically had already had half their lives away from us. And I think that we knew it would be challenging, but we were picturing in the range of 6 to 12 months, you know, kind of like we'd experienced with Ben, and expected that, you know, probably by the time they'd been home a year, they'd be settling in and doing well. And I just didn't understand the depth of the wounds that older kids can have sometimes, and the challenging, I mean, the huge challenge, these kids had switched languages, they'd switched countries, they'd switched all food, you know, I mean, they had basically nothing the same. And here I was saying, well, come on, you've been home 6 months, 12 months, I mean, I wasn't literally using those words, but the expectation in my head was unrealistic. And really, it wasn't until they'd been home more like 3 or 4 years till they started settling in better and doing better. But it was real hard for a while. And I, you know, John and I were experienced parents. And I think almost in a way, it could have been a disadvantage to a degree because we had so many kind of set patterns and so many ways of doing things that had worked well with our other kids but weren't working well with our new arrivals. For just one little example is like, you know, how you put a star chart on the fridge for kids and say, well, if you, you know, clean up your room and do your homework by this time and do X, Y, Z, then you get these rewards, you know, and you get stars on your chart and you earn these rewards. Well, a child who is not yet attached to you, a child who is still grieving, a child who may not even trust you very much yet is not going to care all that much about these star charts. And you just have to be willing to think through your parenting paradigm. And we had to learn to parent in a different way and be a lot more grace-filled and lower our expectations at first. And, you know, sometimes with new kids, behavior that can look very stubborn is actually just an expression of the great challenge that the child is having. And it may look to you like they could choose to do this or that thing that you want them to do, but they may be emotionally truly unable for a while to meet the expectations that you might have. So it actually is one of the reasons that I wrote Forever Mom, because I wanted other moms to be better prepared for some of that challenge than I was. And I hope that some other moms may, you know, from reading about our challenges, be able to do a better job with their kids than I did at first, because my expectations at first were just too high. And I think really, to a degree, that kind of slowed down our attaching for a while.
You made a statement, sort of talked about a ratio that for as long as the child lives in their birth country, it may take that long kind of in your home to make the adjustment. That can be pretty profound if you're, you know, your older children were, what, 9 and 10 or 11.
Right. Well, I do still feel that's true. I mean, I think that things got better for us at 3 or 4 years, but I think that we are still a work in progress here with our older kids, for sure. And, you know, the teen years add challenges to any parent-child relationship. So, you know, they're 16 and 19 now, and those are not easy years. But yeah, it takes kids a long time. And, boy, the better we can be grace-filled and the better we can just love them without too much expectation, I think the better they're going to do.
Do you have any advice for parenting your other children as you work through some of these attachment issues with your adopted child?
I mean, definitely can be challenging. I think that it takes a lot of wisdom, and I think it takes a community around you too. That, you know, I think that sometimes adoptive parents can be slow to ask for help, perhaps, and not let people know maybe just how much challenge there might be in the home. But I think if we as a community around adoptive families can be willing, not only like in the first month or so when we're bringing them meals and, you know, running errands, doing that kind of thing, but, you know, even later down the road, if it seems like things are hard, you know, ask for one thing, how things are going, if you're close enough to, you know, to be able to ask in a nurturing and natural way, but also be willing to sometimes, you know, maybe take some of those kids who are the quote-unquote old kids in the family, you know, take them out for errands with you or take them to the movies or something like that. If you know that the newly arrived kids are sucking up a lot of time and energy in the parents' lives, it can be good to kind of nurture the kids who have been in the family longer. And I think that a really important thing, too, is for the adoptive parents to talk to their biological kids. I look back and I think, oh, you know, I probably didn't do that enough, you know, just talk to my kids, how's it going? And I think that when, especially when bringing home older kids, it's really good to prepare kids for possible challenges, you know. I mean, they may be mad and come in your room and break your stuff, or you know, they may throw an embarrassing tantrum in the middle of Walmart. And if your kids are more prepared for, you know, a lot of up and down emotions, then it won't be quite as hard and quite as surprising. But it definitely is a challenge. And I have been comforted when I think of hard times in our family. I've been comforted by the knowledge that, you know, God knew and did the right thing in our biological kids' lives too. You know, he's been working all our lives, and he is great at working through challenges. So do I wish that some of our other kids had not had some challenges that they did? Well, yeah, that's the mom in me. But God can grow us, and God can redeem challenges in all of our lives, you know, right in the middle of hard times, and teach us something about his nature and teach us about loving each other more too.
You know, you talked a little bit about, you know, getting a community around you. I'm wondering if you do address a little bit about this, you know, oftentimes you bring a new child home, there's an expectation to introduce, you know, your child to, you know, family, friends, church. I mean, you're sort of on display for, you know, maybe a few months or so. And that, those are probably some key times when you need to maybe cocoon a little bit. So how could a loving, supporting community be more effective in helping a new adoptive parent?
Well, I think it is great to keep in mind that family is going to need to grow together, and to have time to do that, that possibly the parents will, probably the parents will need to step back from some outside obligations that they have pretty routinely done. You know, don't ask that new adoptive mom to volunteer on this or that committee for a while, and you know, give her some grace, and you know, keep visits short. And you might want to wait a few weeks to visit. I know people are always so excited to greet new kids, and that is absolutely a wonderful thing. You know, I've been so grateful for that community around. You know, what kids probably most need is a lot of quiet time at home with their parents, just to get to know these new parents of theirs. Doesn't mean you can't help out the family, though. I mean, like I said, meals are always fabulous, whether your child is newborn or 12 on homecoming. And, you know, if you can offer to run to the store for people, or bring other kids to soccer practice, or, you know, just there's lots of ways that you can help out. And often, you know, if you just generally say, well, do you need help with anything? Often parents will say no, right? But if you say, hey, I am at Walmart right now. Do you need milk? What else do you need? You know, that may be a very specific request like that may be more easily accepted. And, you know, sometimes people can just feel overwhelmed, and yet, you know, they chose to adopt. So they sometimes don't want to impose on family and friends around them, because they don't want people to think, well, maybe they're in over their head, or they shouldn't have done this, or whatever. But boy, to be a good friend, it's great if you can just ask, you know, gently and honestly, and see what you can do to help out.
Mary Austin is our guest today. She's written a book called Forever Mom, What to Expect When You're Adopting. It's one of the books that she's written. She blogs on motherhood and food, frugality, and adoption at owlhaven.net. And you can find out more about her and her family of 10, and now a couple of grandkids as well. We're going to talk more in a moment. I've got a question from Jean, who's looking at adopting. And we'll get some reaction to that and other issues. You're welcome to join the conversation. We do have 3 copies of Mary's book to give away. If you'd like to sign up for that, it's 877-933-2484. 877-93-FAITH. More in a moment.
I'm going to show you love in every language. before.
It's 48 past the hour. Mary Austin's my guest today, author of the book Forever Mom, What to Expect When You're Adopting. November's National Adoption Awareness Month, and getting some great insight and advice from Mary. In fact, I recommend the book to you. And her regular blogging at owlhaven.net. Mary's married to her high school sweetheart, live in Idaho. She homeschools the youngest six of their 10 children, including four daughters born in Ethiopia and two sons born in South Korea, and has written this wonderful resource called Forever Mom. And Mary, I thought we should talk about things like cooking and clothes and cornrows and some of those things. How do you navigate the cultural and ethnic preferences with the blending into your American family?
Well, that some of that has been some of the most delightful and interesting stuff. I have loved learning how to cook Ethiopian food and Korean food. In both cases, I have been able to kind of learn a little bit from ladies in our community who are Ethiopian and Korean, and you know, so I can get things authentic. I love to cook anyway, so that's been just a real fun adventure for me. And actually, our oldest Ethiopian daughter has taught me some about Ethiopian cooking. She, well, in Ethiopia, one of the main staples is injera, which is a flat bread that's a sourdough kind of thing, and it's very complicated to make. Many Ethiopian ladies who live in America don't even make it for themselves, but Lydia came home and gave me some pointers and improved my injera greatly, and now we can make it at home successfully, so that's kind of been fun. And then as far as things like hair, that, again, has been a real learning curve. I got to practice at first on my little girls who were 20 months and 6 months on homecoming. So neither of them had very much hair to start with, and so we kind of worked in easy, you know. But then when we adopted our two older girls, they already had lots of hair, so I had to get better at braiding. And again, Lydia taught me a fair bit because as an older girl, she'd spent a lot of time already braiding Zaytuna's hair, and she's done a lot of braiding of our little kids' hair at our house now. But now I can do all that too, so she's still better at it than I am, but I can do quite a decent job at it when I need to, and it's a lot of fun. You know, we do yarn braids and we do beads in the hair and all different things, and so it's been a neat experience learning all these things.
And like anything in parenting, I guess you decide which battles are worth fighting over and which things you accommodate, right?
One of the things that I had thought before parenting older adopted kids was related to food and whether a kid's going to be picky or not. I really, until they came home, thought that kids are picky because their parents let them be picky. No insult to everyone who's listening. I was kind of silly. But our other kids had all become pretty good eaters by you know, I'd say, well, eat three bites of this, eat three bites of that. And they eventually got used to most of everything. And, you know, each kid had maybe one or two things that they didn't like. But in general, they were really good eaters. And so I attempted that approach with our older kids and vastly underestimated the, I mean, even saying it now, I think, my goodness, I was silly, because they had, you know, 9 and 11 years eating whole different types of food. And here I was saying, well, come on, you can get used to American food too. And so I think, yeah, there was a lot of unhappiness over food at first. And these days I'm much more likely to say, you know what, you don't like this, go ahead, make yourself a peanut butter sandwich, it's okay. But back then I was thinking in terms of, well, if they'll just eat a little bit every meal, they'll get used to it. And in some cases that actually did work. But in cases such as, well, their nemesis, actually, the older girls' nemesis is cheese, because in Ethiopia, almost no food has cheese on it. And of course, in America, almost no food doesn't have cheese on it. So there was a lot of food that they did not like, which was, I don't know, it kind of hurt my pride for a while, because I am a good cook, but boy, they didn't think so for a while.
Well, this is as much about God doing a work for as a parent as you are parenting these children, right?
It's crazy. It really has been that kind of a journey. Yeah, God is very gracious to teach me along the way.
But let me get you to respond to Jean's question. She called in from Plymouth and wanted to know, can you discuss all the travel that you had to do during the adoption process? She said her daughter's adopting from the Dominican Republic, and they're just wondering how can someone who's adopting plan financially for all the travel expenses, the time off, work, et cetera?
Yeah, that can be really challenging. I know with our Ethiopian adoptions at that time, there was only one trip, same with Korea. But these days, anybody adopting from Ethiopia has to travel twice, which vastly increases the cost. And yeah, that can be very challenging. There's a really good book written by a friend of mine called Julie Gum. It's called You Can Adopt Without Debt. And in that book, she talks about a lot of great ideas regarding putting money together, fundraisers you can do, and just lots of different creative things. I also talk about that some in Forever Mom, you know, and definitely, you know, pare down your expenses as much as you can. A lot of people decide to cut cable for a while and get by on a little bit less grocery money. So that's where Family Feast could probably come in and help you out a little bit. But, you know, it really can be expensive. I think you just have to, again, lean on God and see where He's leading you and be as wise as you possibly can with the money.
You homeschooled, still do, but maybe say a word about education choices and, you know, that we shouldn't maybe have such high expectations there as well for our kids.
Well, one thing that probably a lot of people don't realize, I certainly didn't realize it at first, is that it takes an older child 4 to 10 years to learn a language fluently. And keep in mind that during that time, say if a child comes home at age 8 or so, well, it's going to take 4 to 10 years for them to learn that language fluently. In that time span, their peers who have always lived in America and spoken English will be also increasing their vocabulary and, you know, learning more complex words, sentence structures. And so catching up, as you might imagine it, may not be even possible. Now, getting competent and capable, absolutely, that is possible. But I think that in our homeschooling experience at first, I just had this idea that, oh, maybe a year or two and we'll get kids all caught up. And it's been a longer process than that. The kids are doing great and well now. But I think that I, in our early homeschooling experience, put a little too much pressure on them and had too much in my mind the idea of getting kids caught up when I really should have been thinking, number one, attachment, and number two, getting kids capable at reading and math and the basics and then spreading out from there to other subjects.
Mary, just got a couple minutes left. I'm wondering just, you know, your book offers some real honest perspective, but also some encouragement. Maybe just give a word of encouragement today to someone who maybe isn't an adoptive parent, but is having their hands full with their kids. What kind of words would you say today?
Well, one of the things that's been most encouraging and helpful to me on this journey is to realize that in the midst of a conflict with a child, I don't have to solve that problem right then and there. So often, like if a kid sasses back or does something that I don't want them to do, I can feel compelled to just deal with that situation right then. But the problem is, in situations like that, defiance usually happens in hot-headed moments when kids aren't thinking clearly. It's much more effective in a lot of cases to step back, give that child a few minutes or an hour to cool down, and then you can go back in and say, you know, how could we have handled that situation better? And, you know, if I did something that also, you know, incited or inflamed the situation, made things worse, then if I can go in humbly and say, wow, I didn't handle this quite well. I think I should have done XYZ. Maybe that would have helped. Then I can also go to the child and say, what do you think you could have done in that situation? And you're just going to get a lot farther if you wait for calm moments to talk through challenges. And that doesn't mean you're not addressing the issue. You're still addressing the issue, but you're addressing it at a time when that child can actually hear you, and then you actually get somewhere.
some wise advice, some encouragement, some good insight today from Mary Austin. I recommend her writing to you. The book we've been referencing is called Forever Mom, What to Expect When You're Adopting. She's also written A Sane Woman's Guide to Raising a Large Family and A Family Feast for $75 a week. She writes regularly, blogs about motherhood, food, frugality, and adoption at owlhaven.net. You can check that out, owlhaven.net. If you missed part of today's show or want to pass it on to a friend, we post the podcast after the show. Just go to myfaithradio.com and then click on the Connecting Faith show page to get the podcast archives, this and other programs. You can share them with friends and always leave a comment, too. We always love getting feedback on the show, so check us out on the show page, myfaithradio.com. Thanks for listening.